Hi, this is Mimi Sheraton, author of 1,000 Foods to Eat Before You Die, and you are listening to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Everybody, welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb. I'm Carrie Diamond, editorial director of Cherry Bomb, the indie magazine about women and food. It's been an exciting week at Cherry Bomb HQ. It's 1 month till our San Francisco Jubilee Conference. Kind of can't believe it. That's 1 month, 4 weeks, and we need every single second of those 4 weeks to get everything finished. But we have such an incredible lineup. I'm not going to say I was moved to tears, but I was really, really just, I don't know, so touched looking at the list last night. And it's like Alice Waters and Tanya Holland and Preeti Mistry and Liz Pruitt and just so many of the amazing women that you've read about in the pages of Jubilee. I love in the pages of the magazine. I love how Jubilee brings the magazine to life. And for those of you who already got tickets and are going, I can't wait to meet you. So if you listen and you have tickets, be sure to come up and say hi to me, because I just love to meet everybody. And it's nice to know who you're talking to out there in radio land. We're also working on the next issue of the magazine. I can tell you the theme. The theme is chefs and restaurants, so you can all start guessing who's on the cover. It's very exciting. The cover shoot is always really fun, and this one was no different. And then last on our busy list is our Cherry Bomb cookbook tour. So the cookbook is out, 10-10, and it is such a beautiful collection of 100-plus recipes. 100-plus women contributed these recipes, and we asked everybody for a meaningful recipe. There's so many recipes online, and so many times you'll like click on one, and it's like, does this really work? Is it any good? So we kind of wanted to sort of rescue the recipe, and we just got so many incredible recipes. Someone said to me, how did you do it? Did you tell people, like, you have to give me an app, you have to give me an entree, you have to give me a dessert? And we didn't. We just kind of rolled the dice. And it was a little hairy in the beginning because literally all the recipes in the beginning were cake recipes. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is going to be a cake book. But then, I don't know, just the universe shined on us and it all sorted out. Some people gave us drinks, some people gave us apps, some people gave us soups, salads, everything. So I can't wait for you to see the book. It's gorgeous. And probably tomorrow we'll start to announce the cookbook tour dates. So the very first public event is October 6th at Books Are Magic in Brooklyn, and we'd love to see all of you there. Admission is free, so just come and hang out and grab a book and a drink and cookies and everything that we have there. And the second date is going to be at Book Larder in Seattle on October 11th. We're really excited to see the Seattle Bomb Squad and catch up with our friends there. Okay, so this season of Radio Cherry Bomb is presented by Le Cordon Bleu. Le Cordon Bleu, the legendary culinary school, has locations around the globe from Paris to London to Ottawa. The schools have a wide array of programs available, from 9-month classical culinary training programs all the way to bachelor and master's degrees. Visit cordonbleu.edu for more. And if you're looking for like a cool thing to do when you go on a trip, you know, it's nice. It's always great to go to the museums and see the sights. But, you know, I don't know. I love the idea of, you've heard me say this, going to Paris and booking a macaroon class. I don't know. I kind of think that would be amazing. We are also happy to announce that Cherry Bomb is working with a new partner, Thrive Market, a great online source for all your organic products. I know so many of us today want to spend our hard-earned dollars with companies that care about people, that care about our health, that care about the environment, and Thrive is just that kind of company. The team at Thrive is offering all of you 35% off your first purchase. That's pretty good, folks. Plus, free shipping and a 30-day membership. Just go to thrivemarket.com/cherrybomb to sign up for it. And why shouldn't you? I wanted to know more about Thrive, so I asked the founder, Gunnar Lovelace, if he would talk to us today, and he is on the line right now, straight from Thrive. Oh, you're at your home office today. That's right. Gunnar, are you there?
I am. Nice to be here with you.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing great. I loved hearing about your lineup. Kudos to you and the work you do in the world.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, we're really excited about Alice and that she's going to be there. She has her memoir out, and it's just a really exciting time to be in the food space. And that was why I was so excited that we get to work with you. I've known about you guys for a while. And first off, thank you so much for the offer for the Bomb Squad.
Yeah, totally mutual.
A lot of us are going to take you up on that. Just wait. But I want to talk to you. You know, I was really sincere when I said that so many of us just want to spend our money where it matters these days. And Thrive, I mean, I'm really excited for everybody to learn more about Thrive because you are doing so many good things. Let's start with what inspired you to start Thrive.
Yeah, so, you know, very, very personal place. Grew up very poor with a single mom, Latino immigrants, and just really saw how hard she worked to make healthy choices. There were many times as a child that we, you know, lived off rice or quite literally like bread and carrots. And, you know, that just always seemed crazy to me that food with lots of chemicals and processing costs less than food with no chemicals and processing. And, you know, I was fortunate enough to have a mother who really prioritized healthy living, even though, you know, we had very modest resources. And when my mother remarried, my stepfather was running a food co-op, a little health food store out of an organic farm that we moved to. And so I really got to see the power of group buying as a way to make food more affordable and build community. And as I went on in my own entrepreneurial career, I felt like there was just a real opportunity to kind of bring this alternative counterculture organic movement mainstream, but also really make it, you know, very, very authentic. And really, you know, I think as you hit on that, food is such an important driver of so many of the opportunities and challenges that we face today on the planet, from our own lifestyle diseases and climate change. And so, you know, I think that our goal is to make healthy living and organic groceries at the same price as conventional equivalents shipped to people's homes for free, conveniently ordered online. And that's comes from a very personal place.
So tell us, for those of the listeners who don't know what a co-op is, I mean, we have a really famous food co-op here in Brooklyn, but you guys are like an online co-op, essentially.
Yeah, so it's, I mean, there's a lot of different models for co-op. I mean, I think basically, you know, the way that we think about ourselves is a membership community. So, you know, normal grocery retail, you have a lot of middlemen in the supply chain. You go from farmer to the manufacturing brand to brokers and then distributors and then the retail markup and all the pay-to-play shelf games that happen in the retail store. And the way they were able to make our pricing so much dramatically lower than you would get anywhere else is we literally buy directly from the brands, we have our own warehouses, and we cut out all the middlemen in the supply chain. And so instead of making money on the product sales themselves, we actually make money on a $60 a year membership. So for $5 a month, you get access to all your favorite organic and non-GMO groceries at wholesale prices, shipped to your home for free. And that's effectively, you know, when you think about a co-op model or other membership models, it's effectively a membership community, and it allows us to have dramatically lower prices on the products and instead make our money on the membership. And the other beautiful part of that model is, you know, we're able, it really enables our giving program. So for every paid membership, we give a membership away to a family in need.
Yeah, let's talk about that, because that is incredible. I mean, if you do nothing else, go to Thrive's site and just look at the Thrive Gives program. Why don't you tell us about that and what it entails and why you launched that in the first place?
Yeah, so again, informed by a very personal experience, and, you know, I think that when we set out to launch the business, we felt like if you couldn't afford a membership, we wanted to make sure that you could have access to it anyway. And so, you know, by having a membership model, by making our money as a business on membership instead of on the product sales, you know, we're able to charge much, much lower prices on the products. But it also allows us to enroll our members into helping fund and sponsor free memberships to low-income families, veterans, teachers, and students. And, you know, we work with over 150 national nonprofit partners to distribute those memberships. And then a lot of people, you know, tens and tens of thousands of people applied, you know, just straight on our site for the free giving program. And it's really, you know, honestly, like the first testimonial that I read of a single mom who was dumpster diving for food out of the back of a Whole Foods to, you know, feed her family. I literally wept when I read that testimonial for, you know, a couple years ago, first testimonials coming in from our giving program. And, you know, I had to dumpster dive for food when I was in college as a full ride scholarship student. So it's, you know, in the midst of all of the stress and the hard work and the uncertainty of building a business very quickly, it's incredibly gratifying to know that we're having real impact on people's lives.
And like Gunnar said, you can go straight to the website and apply for the Thrive Gives program. The application is right there on the site. So if you think you would apply for this, if you know someone who would, you know, certainly spread the word about it. Gunnar, also, all of this is so wonderful, but you guys also put a lot of thought into how the site is structured. The site is really great and navigable. And I love that moms is one of your categories.
Yeah, I mean, as we were talking before the show, I think women and mothers are leading the positive change that is so necessary on the planet. And anything we can do to make the lives of women and mothers more easier is really our primary focus. And so we sort the entire catalog by over 150 qualities and certifications. So if your thing is you need it to be allergen-free, or you want only fair trade labor practices in everything you buy, or you want to sort things by things that are, you know, particular to raising a child, you can sort the entire catalog with one click, and it makes it very easy to get to the items that you need.
Well, we love what you had to say about moms, so we are going to make you an official member of the Cherry Bomb Bomb Squad.
I say yes.
We have a pin. It'll be in the mail by the end of the day. All right. So, Gunnar, I don't want to take up your whole day, but if we could have a sneak peek at your Thrive shopping list, what is always on there?
Given that I'm kind of in a high-intensity startup, I'm always kind of lacking in sleep, and so I'm always looking for great immune boosters. So we have these really great temperature stable probiotics from Dr. Ojeda's, which are awesome. I love traveling with them. You know, 80% of the immune function is regulated out of the digestive tract, so stimulating the digestion with probiotics is a really powerful way, and temperature stable is great. I also love our host defense brand. It's a form of mushroom. It's reishi and chaga, and it really stimulates the immune system as well. Those are more like functional foods, but then, you know, I love almond butter and laundry detergent and maca and many dark chocolate, of course. How could I forget dark chocolate?
Exactly. I love dark chocolate. Well, Gunnar, we're so happy there are entrepreneurs like you in the world, and I hope we get to talk again really soon. And thank you. Thank you for your support of the show, and thank you for extending that offer to our listeners. Again, go to thrivemarket.com/cherrybomb for 35% off your first purchase, plus free shipping and a 30-day membership.
Thanks. Have a beautiful day. Thanks so much.
You too, Gunnar. Take care. Bye.
All right. Bye.
All right. What an awesome guy. He has to come back one day and actually be on the show, because I'd really like to know more. I just hope there are more entrepreneurs like him who are really looking to kind of do right by people, right by the environment, right by all of that. And how amazing that they have that giving program and are just trying to help out people. Because I don't know, a lot of us are very privileged to eat the food that we do. And it's definitely something I struggle with in the food world. You know, you get to go to these beautiful restaurants and eat all this beautiful food when you know that there are people who just do not have access to the same thing. Food deserts are a very real thing. And the more people who are combating that, the better. So kudos to them. All right. Speaking of badasses and just people we love, we have someone in the studio who is the only... Oh, actually... This isn't true. I was going to say she's the only person who ever crashed our Jubilee conference, but Alice Waters actually crashed our first Jubilee conference. So Chef Grace Ramirez, you are in great company. We love Grace. If any of you like really, really follow what we do at Cherry Bomb, then you know Grace is one of our favorites. She's in the new issue of the magazine, the latest issue of the magazine. We love her book. We just think the world of this person, and you're going to learn why, and you're going to fall in love with her too. But Chef Grace Ramirez, welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb.
I literally am getting teary-eyed because the fact that I am here with you, first of all, I want to thank you ladies for really celebrating all these wonderful stories, you know, not only women, but like, I'm really moved by this Thrive.
I know you were sitting there nodding.
I was like, I'm in love. I want to sign up right now. You know, I very much relate to his upbringing and, you know, struggling with healthy choices because they were so expensive and stuff. But yes, I followed you ladies from New Zealand. I lived there for 4 years and I fell
That's
in love with
this magazine. That's where your accent is from,
right? Yeah, totally. I fell in love with this magazine that I saw and I ate it. And I was like, I need to know more about these ladies. What is this beauty? And then I found out that there was the Jubilee. And literally, I flew to New York, and thank God, like I had a lot of excuses, right? But of course, tickets were sold out. I literally sent like tweets, Facebook posts, all kinds of like called everyone that I ever knew to see who had a ticket, and everyone was like, no. And I just showed up, and I was like, please let me in. I will pay like cash.
But wait, we didn't take your money. But tell them who you were begging.
You and your mom.
I knew nothing about this. It was literally all my mother. And my mom's like, oh, she's so nice. She flew here all the way from New Zealand. And I was like, Mom, you can't just let people in. And there's no way she flew here all the way from New Zealand. But now that we know Grace and we know she's kind of crazy.
Yeah, literally, I did. So I volunteered my way in. So I was a bodyguard for a couple of hours and then I got to stay.
You're not a freeloader. We want to make that clear. Yeah, Grace Ramirez is not a freeloader.
I am not. I was there and I was taking my job very seriously. And I was like, no, people, you need to go this way. You can't get in. And then, you know, you and your mother generously enough let me stay and I was so inspired and by that Jubilee that I said, I need to go out and do this book. And I did. So,
and you're talking about your cookbook. So
yes.
At the time your cookbook was sort of a germ of an idea in your brain.
Yeah. I mean, I did culinary school. I come from a production direction background on television and I worked for Food Network for many years. And I was obviously in love with food. I come from a big Latin family. We all love food. My grandmother used to cook for like about 70 cousins on Sundays. So food was always a big part
Wait,
of
70?
Me. Literally. Like I now that I cook, I'm like, how is that possible? And gracefully and like easy and like, oh, it's nothing. We'll just ask Auntie Morella to bring us, you know, more rice. And it's insane the amount of food that they will put out on the table on Sundays. And it, you know, you grow up and you're marked by this image, right? And you think that you have to feed people for the rest of your life. Like that's my mission. And then, so I started work. I was obsessed. I used to work for Nickelodeon, then MTV, then I worked for the Food Network. But just like I did on the Jubilee, I quit MTV without having a job at the Food Network. And I just asked around, like literally, can someone get me a job at the Food Network? No, it was too cool. And I went to my last penny of savings and I was like, great, now I need to earn food stamps. But somehow someone knew someone and I got an interview and then I worked for Bobby Flay for years. So that really inspired me. And I was just like, well, I feel like the world needs a strong Latina woman who can cook and that has a strong voice for, I feel like my people, because I was born in Miami and I grew up a little bit in Venezuela, but then grew up in Miami and in New York. And, you know, when you're here in America, you're Latino. And especially in the kitchen, you're no longer from Venezuela. You're no longer from Colombia. You're no longer Mexican. You're Latinos. And we're united by food and language. And for me, that was very, and that's why the cookbook is called La Latina, because it's a celebration to all these beautiful cultures that have taught me so much. And my mother has lived pretty much everywhere in Latin America, except like Nicaragua, but everything else is checked. So I have spent a lot of time in Latin America, really knowing the culture and analyzing the food and how proud we are of food and how it brings us together, you know. And then I went to Italy and I was like, oh, this is how we are like this. And Spain, because we're obsessed. It just brings everyone together. So long story short, I did the book because I always had it in me. And I always wanted to do a beautiful homage to women and to my culture. And I published it via New Zealand.
So wait, we've talked about this for a second, because Grace is the model of persistence.
Literally.
She does not, she's like Ellen Bennett. Ellen Bennett, you know, who does Hedley and Bennett, the aprons out in Los Angeles. I wonder if she knows Gunnar. They should probably be friends. Yeah. But, you know, she's another one of those people who just doesn't let anything get in her way. And she said, if the door is shut, find a window to climb through. And I feel like you embody that.
Literally. I think that I always give this analogy, like water will always find its way. And it doesn't matter where you, you know, if it's a little hole, you get through it. And I think that all this have taught me is like, you know, and with everything that's going on, I think dreamers, we have to dream. We have to dream, and we can't stop dreaming, and no one can dim our light except ourselves. And for me, it's just been a beautiful example of I have to be my own cheerleader. I have to be and believe in myself, even if no one else believes in me. Because when I approached in America that I wanted to do a book, they were like, who are you? You're no famous. Like, why would we publish your book? And I was like, well, then I'll go and be famous.
But you also told me they weren't that wild about the subject.
Yes, they weren't wild at all about Latin food. They were like, oh, you know, we're not that interested, you know. And then they were like, and you're not famous. You don't have enough followers. You don't have enough of a strong pool. You're not a celebrity. And I was like, okay, I'll become a celebrity then.
But you know what? That kind of pisses me off. And you know, we'll be, but not to jump so far ahead, but Cherry Bomb will be exploring this a little bit next year with some special projects. But people get cookbook deals all the time who have no followings, who I'm shocked by some of the people who get cookbook deals. Yeah. I'm shocked we got a cookbook deal. So
come on.
No. I honestly was. I never really thought that we would do a cookbook.
Well, we're very excited.
I'm so grateful, and I absolutely love the cookbook. But I, you know, we weren't shopping around this proposal. We didn't have, you know, it wasn't built out of this like fire inside us to do a cookbook the same way it was with you. But I feel like, you know, what's the cookbook world needs to expand.
Yeah.
And they need to bring in a lot more people and a lot more cultures and cuisines. And they need to do it pretty quickly, you know, because it can't just be white people doing cookbooks. So, it bugs me that you literally had to go all the way to New Zealand.
Literally.
So let's go to part two of this story. To get a book about Latin food published, you had to go to New Zealand, which is not exactly a hotbed of Latin cuisine.
But, you know, I loved living in New Zealand and exploring the New Zealand and Australian mentality, because they're so open.
Mm-hmm.
They're so open to new things because they're so isolated. They feel like they're craving that change. They're craving something that's different. And, it ended up being that I did culinary school because when I do something, I'm very like a little, you know, just like a horse that sees, I'm like, okay, if I'm going to do this and if I'm going to be this strong Latina women that represent Latin culture and food, I have to do culinary school. So I went to the French Culinary here Institute. And again, talk about determination. It was like, I'm going to get that scholarship because I had no money to pay for school. So, you know, I asked around like everyone that I had done a show for the Food Network to give me a recommendation letter. And then I went with my little portfolio. And then they were like, literally the day before school was going to start, they were like, you're one of the two who got the scholarship. So,
wow. Did you have a letter from Bobby Flay?
I didn't, because he was a little bit upset at me that I had left him.
Oh, okay.
But I love Bobby. Bobby has been a very, an amazing supporter, and just like, you know, once he got over it, that he was, because I wasn't clear of what I really wanted to do, but once he saw the big picture, he was like, I get it and go do it. But at first, you know, I was even scared myself. So I didn't even know how to articulate how big my dream was, because I literally wanted to go to culinary school, have a cookbook and have shows, including the Food Network, which now we have. So I was like, how is this all going to happen?
I just thought of a question, because I'm reaching in my bag for my wallet. So let me talk so there's not like dead air right now. But when, you know, talking about dreams, I was at a party last night at Atelier Doré, Garance Doré's new offices.
Yeah.
And they had this really fun dinner sponsored by Nespresso.
Ooh,
give them a shout out. And I was talking to Garance and I met this cool guy Richard Christensen, who's from Australia, and he runs a company called Chandelier. It's a big creative agency.
I have to meet him.
You do. Super cool guy. And we're talking about something. And oh, so we just relaunched our website, right? Shout out to Allie, who built the website for us. She's in the studio right now. We used to have like the saddest website. Now we have this really beautiful site, and we were able to take advantage of like a lot of the great original photography.
I looked at it in New Zealand and it was like three things. It said nothing. I was like, I need more information, guys.
I know. I'm sorry. It was sad. Okay. We're getting better day by day. But anyway, so talking to this guy about building the website, and I said, we're really excited that we have a section called mission statement, because we actually do have a mission statement, you know, supporting women in the world of food. And he said, do you have a personal mission statement? Mm. And I was like, oh, no, I don't. I never even thought about that. But as I hear you talking, did you ever write your dreams down? Did you do any of those things like build one of those like dream boards?
My mom would have me like do cutouts, you know, and put it on a board. She was big into that. Now she's more into meditation. But yes, I grew up like literally having cutouts because, you know, I grew up from the first 10 years of my life very privileged. And then, you know, economy crashed in Venezuela, all the things that horrible things that you hear are true happening. So then we went from being a middle class family to being a very, you know, it was tough kind of family. And she would just keep saying, you know, you have to dream really big. And I was fortunate enough to be born in this country. So I was an American. So I'm an American citizen. So she goes, you have it all. And she was right. I mean, I would, you know, now with everything that's going on, I have so many friends going through this nightmare of the dreamers. And I'm like, oh my God, I feel so lucky that I for the first time felt lucky. First of all, I am an American citizen. Second of all, I speak both languages. And even in kitchens while I was working, I would be the one who to translate from my executive chef to my people, to the line cooks. And that really moved me. And it moved me to the point that I felt like a social responsibility that I needed to make this dream come true, because if it wasn't me, who? And how I was going to do it, I had no idea, but I was going to do this because I needed to deliver the message of, first of all, Latin culture, because I think there's so many stereotypes and very myths. There's a lot of urban myths about Latin culture in general and food. And I was like, well, my channel will be food. What's not to love about food? And when you talk about food, your heart opens up and everyone's door opens and everyone invites you to a table. So I was like, I will deliver my message of Latin food and culture and celebrating women. The cookbook is just a celebration of all the strong women in my life. My grandmother, who's in the article, and my mother and my aunt and just that spirit that it's like, we don't take no for an answer. And if we take a no, we're like, oh, cute. You're cute. But let's keep going.
All right. That is a great place to pause. We are going to take a break for a message from Le Cordon Bleu. And then we're going to be right back with Grace Ramirez to talk about her grandmother, to talk about the food in her cookbook. And Grace is a trained chef. So we're going to get some tips and tricks from Grace. Sure. We'll be right back.
Le Cordon Bleu, the renowned culinary school, was founded in Paris 122 years ago by a young journalist named Mademoiselle d'Estelle. In 1895, she launched the first weekly culinary magazine called La Cuisinière Le Cordon Bleu. She invited subscribers to take part in free cooking lessons with the chefs featured in her magazine, and from there, the school was born. In the years since, Le Cordon Bleu's world-class instructors have taught French classical culinary techniques to everyone from home enthusiasts to food world legends. If you've dreamt of attending culinary school, maybe it's time to quit that boring corporate job and check out one of Le Cordon Bleu's 35 locations around the world. Or add a short workshop or weekend program at one of its schools to your next vacation. Visit cordonbleu.edu. for course descriptions, dates, and online registration. It's all possible at Le Cordon Bleu.
There'll be nothing left when we're through. Hey.
Hey, Bomb Squad, welcome back. We are in the studio live with Chef Grace Ramirez, the author of La Latina, a beautiful cookbook that's on our shelves at Cherry Bomb. We love that book. And before we talk about your grandma, tell us about your TV show quickly, because we didn't touch on that at all.
Yeah, so then after I started, so in New Zealand, I started teaching cooking classes. And then someone came up to me and goes, look, we're casting. I mean, this is a very long story short, but they were casting for a show called My Kitchen Rules, which is kind of like Top Chef. So I became one of the judges for this TV series, which ended up being amazing and so fun. And I did 2 seasons of that, and that's how I got to publish the book via New Zealand. And then while I was doing the book, you know, talk about relationships that you build, my friends who worked at MTV started working at Food Network Latin America. And then, you know, in Food Network Latin America, they were like, we're looking for a host. We want to cast you. So I was like, oh my God, this is like a dream. And I remember the day that they wanted to cast me, there was a snowstorm here in New York, like one of those that it literally shuts the city down. And I was like, how am I going to get, and the producer was in Bloomingdale. She was shopping because she was here from Brazil. And of course she had to shop while there was a storm. So I'm like trying to get dressed, but then I'm wearing like these gum boots, you know, this plastic boots, because I need to get over there. The taxis weren't taking me. So I was like running and going into the subway, and I literally made it. And then I had to change in one of their fitting rooms to look decent, for this casting kind of first conversation.
This is a very Grace Ramirez story right now.
Literally. I had to tell that story because it was so funny. Like it was like apocalyptic outside. And I was like, hi, how's it going? And she's like, she only knew what I went through. I like hit the boots in one of the, you know, behind one of the counters, because I didn't want to show up with like plastic boots and disgusting. So anyways, they cast, I think she like felt sorry for me of how much I persevered. And then they did a formal casting and I finally got the show. So I travel throughout all Latin America. We just did a Peru, Colombia, Chile, and Argentina, 16 episodes. It's in Spanish, the first show. It's called Destino con Sabor, Destins with Flavors. So that airs from Mexico all the way down to Patagonia. And then now we just did an airable. I just found out that it's going to air, which I'm shocked, because the Food Network tells me they want to do a pilot. This has been 10 years in the making. But they said, finally, we want to do a pilot with you. And then I shoot it. And I'm like, oh, great. Just the executives are just going to see it and it's going to be fine. And then they told me that it's going to air, which I'm shocked. I'm like, really? It's an airable pilot? I mean, I'm just stoked about finally having the opportunity of Food Network US giving me an opportunity, which is very exciting.
Congratulations.
It's just, you know, a little something.
Oh, it's more than a little something. I know how hard you've worked toward that goal. So let's talk about your grandma. Yeah. If you have the new issue of Cherry Bomb, there's a beautiful picture of Grace with her grandma in there. And sadly, your grandmother passed away shortly after the magazine came out.
Yeah.
So I know you're still grieving.
Literally.
And we just wanted to say how sorry we were. You and I have talked about your grandmother for a while, and didn't you dedicate the book to her?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's completely dedicated to her.
And I kind of, in the back of my head, always thought we would meet her one day, so I'm sorry that we'll never get the chance. But tell us about her.
You know, thank you. Thank you so much. Because, first of all, that exact photo was the one that we used on her funeral. Because I feel like grandma's life has just to be celebrated. And the book, La Latina, a cookbook, it says, Grandma, this is for you. Abuela, esto es para ti. And because it is everything I've done, it is for her. I mean, she was the one who raised me. I come from a single mother. My dad passed away when I was a year old. So I come from a very hardworking mom and a very hardworking grandmother who always cooked, and she would sew for a living. So she was amazing. And I am who I am because of her. But I am so grateful that this came out just before she passed. She literally saw it and she started crying just seeing herself in the magazine. She couldn't believe it. And first of all, she thought it was like Martha Stewart's magazine because she loves Martha. So I had to explain to her, I was like, no, grandma, it's like, you know, my friends from Cherry Bomb. And she was like, no, I'm in Martha Stewart's magazine. I mean, she was in Venezuela, so she was really confused. But she was like weeping how excited she was to see herself in somehow in the contest of Martha and her. And literally, my cousin was supposed to take the magazine to her, and she passed very suddenly that week. So the fact that she even got to see herself in the magazine, it's pretty epic. Like, I still have that image when I was on, you know, on FaceTime and just showing it to her, and she started weeping. She was like, I can't believe it. It's me in the magazine with you and the book. So I am so grateful. I mean, it all worked out. I'm glad that I harassed you and like made myself. I went into Jubilee that determined.
Well, I didn't really know you were harassing us. So it was sort of, you know, it was benign harassment, I guess, on your part. But yeah, I'm that's great. I'm so sorry. And that I kind of have tears in my eyes, yeah, because I was laughing that your, yeah, grandma thought she was in Martha Stewart magazine. And if that's what made her happy, that is totally fine by us.
It was very hard to explain to her, you know, the difference. But she was like, but what do you mean? Like, Martha's there. I was like, well, it's an article about Martha. She's like, she just kept telling all her friends that she was in Martha Stewart's magazine.
That's super cute. So what were some of the things that she cooked when you were growing up?
You know, the beautiful thing about growing up in Venezuela, when I grew up there, was that we had so many influence from Spain and Italy and the food from there, that I grew up eating, you know, it was paella one day, pasta the next day, and pabellón the next day. Obviously, we ate a lot of arepas, which are my favorite, and a lot of cachapas, which are also my love. I ate a lot of traditional Venezuelan food, but again, that's why the book also is a tribute to how I ate growing up. And imagine doing a cookbook about all Latin America in 300 pages is very hard, but that's why it's so personal, because I would, on Sundays, I will have huevos rancheros. I would have, you know, huevos divorced eggs from Mexico on a Saturday. So the book is just a celebration about the way I grew up. You know, when we would go to Mexico, we will have, you know, chilaquiles. And when we would go to Argentina, we would obviously have empanadas. And then when I go to Chile, I usually have pastel de choclo. So it's just a little celebration, and it's very accessible, because also grandma made everything look very easy. So she would adapt things without losing authenticity, but to make it simpler, because there were so many of us. I mean, I am an only child, but I grew up with like literally 70 cousins, and every afternoon, at least 6 or 7 people would show up, because that was her way of manipulating us. Even ex-boyfriends or ex-husbands, and a lot of exes that was always in the house. You know, I would be like, this is one big happy family. Now that I look back, it was really weird, but it was all because of the food.
So what, it sounds like your grandmother could have run a catering company.
Literally.
With the quantity she would have to make. What would she make to serve a lot of people?
Usually the crowd pleaser, and with like about 70 people, was arroz con pollo, the traditional chicken and rice, you know, Venezuelan style. And
What does that mean, Venezuelan style?
Well, because this is really funny in the book. If you read it, it's like, so when I was testing the recipe for arroz con pollo, you know, I made the mistake of having my Cuban friend come, my Puerto Rican friend, my Costa Rican friend, my Chinese friend. I invited her because she was helping me do the cookbook with me. But I was like, you guys make great fried rice. It was so wrong. But it was like, it was so funny, because we all fought on how this rice was supposed to be made. And, you know, I was like, well, you know, my grandmother does it like this. Like Costa Rican, they shred the chicken. In Cuba, they add beer and it's more runny depending on the household. In my house, yeah, it's like, it's kind of made like with the sofrito, and the way it's, anato seeds are the one who gave it that beautiful color.
Tell everybody what a sofrito is.
Sofrito is basically, you saute, like my grandmother used to say, ajo, cebolla, pimentón. Ajo, garlic, cebolla, it's onion, pimentón, pepper. So you saute those three things, and then you have the base to everything. So grandma, when I didn't know how to cook that well, she was like, remember, the sofrito, ajo, cebolla, pimentón, ajo, cebolla. So that stuck in me, and I know I can't cook anything without that. She made it in a very beautiful way and enlarged. Like, I remember these huge kind of paella pans where she would make them. She would make two of them at a time. And yeah, she would feed like about, a lot of people with
two paella pans at a time.
Yeah.
My God, how big is her kitchen?
Yeah. Well, we had a, really big kitchen. That's how I grew up. And it was kind of like those, I mean, she made the open kitchen, social kitchen before it was in, because the kitchen was literally in the center of the house and she had a huge island in the middle of the kitchen. So everyone could stand around it and on the table. And you always had a shore. You know, if you would sit there, you needed to cut something. You always had something. But at the same time, she was very protective. She was like, okay, you get to chop this, but don't touch my pots and pans, you know, kind of thing. So it took a while. It was so funny, like these endless calls with her to talk to me through this recipe. So thank God I went to culinary school, because this was like hours when you had the calling card, you know. I was like, Grandma, give me the recipe to the shredded beef, to the ropa vieja, to la carne mechada. She's like, well, and then she'll be like, this is a little bit of this and then a little bit of that. I was like, how can you even follow this recipe? I couldn't, but it was a great talking point. And I think that I'm so happy that I found this cooking path, because it ended up being such a beautiful, you know, topic of conversation with Grandma that only brought us even more together. We would have endless conversations about food and how to make this and how to make that. And, you know, and she'll be like, but you know, your auntie, whatever, she makes a better version than mine. So you better get the recipe from her. So that was the book. It was just getting kind of like, because they each knew what their strengths were. So like, for example, there's a beautiful beef that we make that is asado negro, and my auntie Gladys makes the best one. And she'll be like, go ask Gladys. And I was like, she's not giving it to me, Grandma. She's like, don't worry, I'm gonna take notes. And she literally was like, give me notes. I was like, abuela, this doesn't make sense. She said, I know, she kept something from me. So the book is very personal, and it's all about those stories of how I got all these recipes from all these women that I know, nanas, grandmas, my friends' grandmothers all over Latin America. And within the family, it was a big controversy. So my aunties, Letty, she goes, how come you didn't get a recipe from me? I'm like, auntie, I've never seen you cook in my life. Like, she's like, fair enough.
There's always the second book, right? So what would you say is your signature dish?
Well, you know, I love making, the pabellón is very meaningful to me because it consists of shredded beef, rice, black beans, and plantains. So that rice, that dish itself is Venezuela's traditional dish. And every time I make it, just the smells and of the beans cooking and the beef and the plantains, when I'm frying those plantains, it's like home. It's 100% home. But I gotta say, my stepfather is from Peru, and I'm in love with Peruvian food. Like, I love making ceviche, and I've been to Peru a lot because of him. And
such a fascinating cuisine.
It is.
And so many influences.
I know. And it's like, obviously I'm from Venezuela. I celebrate the food. I love everything about it. But I got to say, and I've been talking, and now I'm so happy that Peru is finally getting the recognition it deserves, because for 15 years I've been saying Peru has some of the best food in the world, and it's so unexpected. So lately when I go to Peru, I've been trying to like nail some recipes down, because I love it. And it's a lot of seafood that I love, and fresh flavors, and that lime and cilantro and chiles. That's the kind of food I crave. But obviously, you know, arepas and pabellón are like my heart.
So what's in the Grace Ramirez pantry? If you had to narrow it down to just like a few things that are always in your cupboard.
Well, a lot of salts, different salts. I'm obsessed with different salts. Like, I have the Himalayan salt. I have a salt from Cusco. I have the flaky, beautiful Maldon sea salt. A lot of salt and yes, chili flakes. I make my own chili flakes, like from Guajillo chilies. So that's always
there. You make
there.
Your own chili flakes.
I do. Because I love Guajillo chilies. I love that they're very mild, but they have a little kick, and they have so much personality because they have all these berries coming through. So I literally grind them and I make kind of like chili salt that I put over everything. I have to send you some. I'll make it for you.
And maybe you can give us a little recipe that we can run.
Literally, it's in the book. It's literally just grinding Guajillo chilies, and then I mix them with a beautiful coarse sea salt, and then I put it on everything. Like,
and what do you
fish.
Grind them in? Do you have like a spice grinder?
I have a spice grinder. I have a spice grinder, but at the same time, you know, if you put your, if you just run your blender, your motor, and then you quick, you know, from that little top, you put them in, it's fine. You just kind of make them run. I mean, they're going to be a little finer than I like them to be, but it's fine. You can make your own chili salt.
Your fans are out there, Grace.
Oh, yeah, I know. Hi, how are you guys?
Tell us what you put it on.
I put it on top of chicken, fish, meat, everything. Yum. I mean, it turns anything that is, that you're like, what am I supposed to do with this? I just add that, then I put lime and a little bit of olive oil, and you will be so happy.
Yum.
It's just going to be, you're going to be happy. So, yeah, salts and chile. Always cilantro. I always have cilantro. I think I need a plantation, but I try growing it in New Zealand and it's really hard. It turns into seeds really quickly, which I learned. So I was like, oh, so I wasn't that great at it. But yeah, cilantro and limes.
Great. Okay.
Basically that.
If we had to pick one gateway drug recipe out of your cookbook, like the one thing that people are going to make to get hooked to make everything else, where do they start?
I think I have to give you two that every time people do those two, they're like, okay, and now I need to cook everything from this book. One of them, it sounds simple, but my guacamole is like banging. And because it's so sexy, because I put pomegranate seeds and then black sesame seeds. But the thing is about guacamole, people do crazy things to it. And I'm like, no, if you're going through the trouble of finding beautiful avocados, celebrate them. So just add lime. That's the thing. People don't add enough lime, or they don't add a coarse enough salt to make that avocado sing. Like, we have to make avocados sing. They're so beautiful and tasty. So very few ingredients, cilantro, obviously, the ones. I mean, some people don't like cilantro and it's fine, but make sure that avocado has enough flavor and enough love. And ceviche, for sure. The ceviche.
The ceviche recipe, okay.
Yeah.
Do you know that a certain percentage of the population is actually allergic to cilantro? Not allergic, but they it tastes like soap to them.
I know. I've heard of this.
I just learned that. Yeah.
And this is crazy to me. Like, I think a world without cilantro would be, it's a sad world. But hey, I get it. And it's okay. If you don't like cilantro, you can add parsley. It's fine. Just, or even mint, just add a little, a herb that makes it shine. But enough lime is fine.
Perfect. Okay, yeah. So ceviche and your guacamole, which I don't pronounce as nicely as you
guacamole.
Do.
I am sure if you try, you know, also because they're very simple. And I think that people don't cook enough because they feel intimidated, you know. And for me, it was, let me master one thing and then move over to the next. And I always say these to people, like, master one thing and feel like you can own it. And if you have any dinner party, I mean, if you have any dinner party and you put some guacamole and chips and ceviche, everyone will be happy. Plantain chips as well. I think you should have plantain chips. And
that's a great tip.
Yes. Yes. I love the plantain chips.
Because you can find
chips.
Them a lot more places
yes,
now.
Yes. Now you can find them everywhere. So I think if you have a dinner party and you just have those two things with the plantain chips and the corn chips, you're sweet. And then you gain confidence and you're like, I'm going to have that person. Okay. Now I'm going to have someone else. Now I can cook something else. So you always need that baby steps. That's what I like to say, baby steps. So baby steps will totally get you to cook more.
And then you're also known as the girl who brings the guac.
Oh, yes.
And that is a good thing to be known as.
I am that girl. It's so funny. Like, you know, in the summer when we have picnics in Central Park, everyone's like, can you bring the guac? Can you bring the guac? I was like, guys, I need to go home and make it. And then, so, I mean, if you guys don't know this, but if you put the pit of the avocado and you put cling wrap enough and you put it in an airtight container, it lasts longer. So I've learned all the tricks about how to keep guac without turning black. Oxidation, obviously enough lime prevents it from oxidizing. Keep the pit, to do the cling wrap, airtight container. And I learned this, that if you mash it enough on an airtight container, but then you put a little bit of water on top, that also, and then the cling
water,
wrap.
Water, really?
Yes.
Huh.
But you have to make sure you mash that avocado down because if not, it dilutes it. But yeah, you put it like a little mashed potato and then a little bit of water and then the cling wrap. That's also a good
trick. Do always leave the pit.
Yes.
Because I never use a whole avocado when I'm just by myself. So I always leave the pit in. Even if the pit came out, you could put the pit back in.
You have to put it back in.
And just put it in a container. And I've been trying to use less plastic, so I've been skipping the cling wrap. But I just take the avocado, throw the pit back in, and put it in like one of those restaurant quart container things.
Yeah, I understand the thing about plastic. You're right. And if you don't want to do plastic, you can also do like a bounty sheet, you know, like a little, like just on top. Because basically that, it just helps prevent, you know.
Dry or wet?
You can wet it and put it on top. Okay. It's the same thing for fresh herbs. You can wet them and then put them with the herbs and then put them like, on a little plastic, on a little container of whatever you like.
I do that. I wet a paper towel and like paper squeeze towel, it and then wrap it and put it like
that's
either
another
in
great
a
tip.
Big Tupperware or something. They always sell you too much cilantro though.
Yeah, like, I agree.
The cilantro is sold if you have like a giant family and need to make food for a giant family.
Well, what I do is buy the little plants now. I cut, you know, as much cilantro as I need. You're right. It's for someone who lives by themselves. It's a lot of cilantro and I feel like, but two things. First of all, you can either buy the little plants, or second of all, literally keep them like if it's a flower, and it lasts double.
See, but I have a green thumb when it comes to plants. When it comes to herbs, I have the black thumb of death.
I know.
I can't grow them in my apartment.
It's hard. It's
mint, hard. I mean, I tried to grow mint once, and it was like bugs everywhere. I've tried to do it all. You know what's an herb tip? I bought basil this summer from the farmer's market, and it still had the roots attached to it. You just put that in water.
Yeah.
Do not put it in the fridge, and it lasts forever.
Well, it's the same thing with cilantro. Make sure you kind of buy the ones. I mean, you know how a lot of places have the ones with the root? Same thing. Same thing. But the funny thing is, you know, I am the same. Like, in New Zealand, I was determined to have a veggie garden. It was like the funniest thing ever. Like, it ended up being like, and then I was composting, and then I like put the little bit of the compost liquid into my veggie garden. Then an apocalyptic cloud of flies and all kinds of animals came chasing me. And I was like, this is, you know, I was like, I don't think I'm doing this right. But I'm getting better. I've been learning a few tricks. I'm in New Zealand, like everyone has a green thumb. So I've been learning a few tricks here and there. Now I can keep some herbs alive, and I could keep like a few other things alive, but it's hard. It's hard. It's harder than people think. Definitely.
All right. We can nerd out on herbs and cilantro for a while, but sadly the show has to come to an end. So everybody, now do you understand why we love Grace so much?
I love you girls.
We could talk to you for hours.
Me too.
And you're all going to buy her book, right?
Amen. Thank you.
You are going to go to your favorite indie bookstore
or Amazon
or Barnes & Noble or wherever and pick up Grace's book. If they don't have it, ask them to order it because they should have it. Are the recipes amazing and the writing's fantastic. Beautiful photography, beautiful design, beautiful cover.
Yeah.
It's a book you could put out on your table.
Yeah, it took, I'll just dedicate 1 minute to it because it was a true labor of love, and I made sure that all the details were spot on. Like, literally, I've invested so much money and time and energy because I felt the culture needed this beautiful book, and I hope you all enjoy it because it's a true labor of love. So thank you for celebrating it.
And let's show the publishing industry that there is a market for books like this.
Amen.
Go buy it. All right.
Thank you. Gracias.
Thanks, Grace.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks, as always, to our engineer, Dave Tadashore, and much love to Le Cordon Bleu for making the season of Radio Cherry Bomb possible. Be sure to visit cordonbleu.edu for information about this legendary culinary school. And if you do happen to sign up for any of their classes, whether the big programs or the short programs, let us know. Tag us in a picture or, I don't know, send us an email, whatever. You guys know how to find us. And thank you to Gunnar and the team at Thrive Market. As mentioned, Thrive is offering all of you 35% off your first purchase, plus free shipping and a 30-day membership. Go to thrivemarket.com/cherrybomb to check it out. Our cookbook's out 10-10, like I mentioned. I told everybody, if we make the New York Times bestseller list, I know this is a long shot, I will color my hair pink. And I said, not just a rinse, I would like legit strip it and color it pink. I'm kind of now like, oh my God, am I going to have to go through with this? But I said I would, and I will. We are also going to announce our book tour really soon, and we are hitting so many cities. We're going to come to Boston, LA, Seattle, Chicago, lots of places. So stay tuned for that. Please subscribe to the podcast if you don't, and leave a review. We would absolutely love that. And that's it, everybody. Thanks for listening. You're the bomb. Boys and girls are on fire. Boys and girls are on fire. The whole world.
My name's Claire Welly, and I'm a cook at a small bistro called Otway in Clinton Hill, Brooklyn. Radio Cherry Bomb is a joint production of Cherry Bomb Magazine and the Heritage Radio Network. To subscribe or to learn more about the magazine, visit cherrybomb.com. You know who I think is bomb? Alex Baker at Eve's Restaurant in Tribeca. I've known Alex for a few years now, and I instantly knew this woman would do great things. An extremely talented cook, she's always thinking about doing more and doing it better. Having her on the line next to me were some of the best times I've had. Baker, you're crushing it.